given me some terrible news.
Yeah, I didn't prepare you very well for it either, did I?
Oh my God,
Ben.
No. This was, can I say, Mike, this has been an absolute lesson in how not to handle these things.
We were having quite a nice chat before then.
We're having a lovely old time.
I was in high spirits.
Mm-hmm. You've had your porridge.
I've had my porridge with hot blackberries.
Mm-hmm.
Hot blackberries?
Yeah.
Wow.
I want a bit of a health kick, and I've decided that the key to it is hot blackberries.
Okay. Ben, we've all been through this phase. There's always health kicks very often involve an extreme view on berries and temperature.
And yes.
That there's a kind of alchemy. There's an alchemical sort of combination of the two, yeah, that will solve.
You microwave the blackberry for so long that it has no possible nutritional value.
Yeah, completely.
Any longer. It's just some roof of your mouth burning mush now.
That's my health kick. I'm shocking my body with hot blackberries. My body doesn't know if it's coming or going. What's going on?
So some people plunge themselves into the icy North Sea.
Yes.
You shock from the inside with heat.
I'm ingesting hot blackberries in every orifice.
Because, of course, your body has absolutely no... There's no playbook for this, is there? There's no manual, essentially, is there, for a hot blackberry? Because in nature, there's no way in nature a blackberry could ever be that hot.
No, exactly. Unless it'd been struck by lightning.
And even then, you've got to be really on it. You've got to seize on that blackberry. I mean, in the moments after the strike, you've got to seize on it.
Yeah, and to be, you know... And you need to be a squirrel that's got more than just a little bit of something about him to experience, to be that close to a lightning.
You need to be
strike.
A squirrel with a pair of rubberized oven mittens, don't you?
and a tiny welding mask, I'd argue. Yeah. to be that close to a lightning strike, and then after just opportunistically think, yeah, I'm just gonna try that hot smoking blackberry. I'm gonna give that a go.
I mean, the both of you mock now, but when I'm on. Mm. Late night TV selling the Ben Partridge hot blackberry regime.
Yeah. With the special mini oven, the special... And also what you need is...
The nuclear oven.
The special nuclear oven. Using Higgs boson technology. you'll need to say things like that. Also, one thing which might help you is... Because what I'm picturing is this is the kind of thing which they sell in American infomercials.
Hmm.
And also, have you ever been to, oh God, I might be opening up a whole new high street shop for us to chat about that I think we've ever touched on. But have you ever
not
been
Holland
to Robert
Barrett?
No, not Holland or Barrett.
Okay.
we're not ready for that yet. Robert Dias.
Okay. I don't think there is a Robert Dias in my local area. I think it might be a bit of a London thing, maybe.
I don't know what it is. I thought it was sofas.
Damn.
Is it not sofas?
No. Oh, for the love of... No. Oh, I didn't know that was a London thing. No, well,
it might not be. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just your all your household items in one slightly
including
depressing
sofas.
Space. Anything practical. So, Hoovers, wet mops, dry mops, row after row of battery, light bulb corner.
Okay. Spatula Avenue.
Spatula Avenue. Cheese Grater Boulevard.
We could go on. We sometimes do.
The Meat Hammer Highway.
Now permanently closed. There's no getting around it. It's a middle-aged space. It's a space that you simply don't notice up until the age of...
So you're saying Mike and I are maybe too cool and youthful?
You might be too cool and youthful for it.
To even notice one. Yeah.
But the other thing that's weird about it is that it's staffed exclusively by awkward sort of teenagers. So there's a real expertise sort of gap.
So they've no interest in the garlic crushers at all. They don't care. They don't know what it is.
Exactly.
Exactly how heavy duty are these bin bags? Give me an answer.
Because look, we will You know what I'm talking about. I mean, yeah, because things often claim to be heavy duty, don't they? But I mean, but are they always? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Hello, kid, are you looking at me? Is that what?
The literage is not labelled on these. How is it 40 litres? What are we talking here? Because I've got a 30 litre petrol bin. Hmm? I don't want overhang. Do you understand me? I've got guests coming this weekend.
Okay, so this tinfoil is claiming to be extra long, but in which direction? Sorry, Robert Dias, there's a lot going on. Yeah. Also, they have infomercials running.
Oh, is it the JML thing?
So
in B&Q, a place like that, there'll often be a little television, and then it'll be like, smash eggs the new way with the new egg smasher from JML. And it's always a kind of...
It's just a simple 15-stage process.
Exactly. It's little things that are meant to revolutionise your life, but that you would never use. I wish I could do the voice properly, because he's got this very distinctive JML voice. It's kind of like the JML egg smash. No.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's that,
it is.
It's that slightly English voice that no one actually uses in real life.
Yeah. It's a bit like the guy who does the voiceover on Strictly. Slightly.
Yes, it is.
A million miles from that.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, that just seems a strange choice. You'd have thought they'd have gone for some earthy, trustworthy regional accent rather than a...
Yes, good point. No, it's much more...
No, it's very much...
Voiceover.
Yeah. But it's much more clearly snake oil salesman. It's kind of...
The new Nylon Hedgehog Hotel from JML. It's that kind of...
Yeah. It's often solving problems that you didn't know that were problems. They have a logic to them, which is when you start watching them, they kind of... They're giving you microdoses of dopamine, essentially, the way they work. Because what will happen is, it'll be like, the Julien 5000. And you'll be like, okay, that voice has piqued my interest. I'm getting a little hit off the Julien 5000.
You've nailed the voice, by the way, Henry. That's it. Yeah.
5000. Also, 5000, I know for a fact, is a high number. I can't, I can't deny that. So,
and however finely you've julienned a carrot or an onion or whatever it may be, you've never done it to the factor of 5000.
Exactly.
You can't achieve that by hand.
Exactly. So I'll think, you know what? This is, obviously, I'm not going to buy this bloody thing. I'm not an idiot. But it has piqued my interest with the whole idea of julienning and the 5000. Those two things combined. With the voice, Julien 5000. I'm going to just have a look at it on my way either to or fro the light bulbs.
Can I add that always the product, quite high up in the list of reasons why you should buy it, even if it isn't going to make a difference and doesn't really seem to have any relevance to the product, it's always non-stick in some way.
That's right. This mini hedgehog hotel is completely non-stick. Again, it's solving problems that you didn't know that you had. But also, just the concept of non-stick, just wait for it. You'll feel a microdose of dopamine. Non-stick.
Yeah. It's coursing through my brain right now.
It's undeniable. Because sticking, is bad. It's bad. Yeah, it's bad to be stuck to things. No one's ever said, have I told you that the wonderful story about how I got stuck doesn't happen? Stuck is always bad. So non-stick is therefore always good.
Can I also put forward another sort of hallmark of JML products? So they're always non-stick, but also at some point he's always going to say, it's 8-in-1.
Yeah. Ooh.
Like this thing is always going to have loads functions. Of ways of using it.
But what they do is they're always upping the ante. So they grip you with something small that just, so you have a quick look at it, and then it'll be the Julien 5000 with Julien, tomatoes, eggs, mushrooms, cheese, sandwiches, pasta, tomato sauce, friends, ideas, sofas, and the amount of things at Julien's, because it keeps coming at you. You just can't, you basically can't take your eyes off it, because it keeps on giving you more than you, so that dopamine keeps going up and up. And so, for example, one trick they do is, they'll go, which is brilliant, they'll go, not one, not two, but seven. They'll jump. Yeah, they're always upping the factor by which things are being multiplied. And
so your brain just goes, one, two. Yeah. Well, I guess next one. What?
Whoa. And when you wake up, you're basically, you've got is Julien 5000s. That's all you've got.
And they revive you. Because a lot of people have to be revived by these.
When you're revived.
Yeah. They've already put it in your boot of your car. The receipts on the passenger seat.
But also your car is now made of boxes of Julien 5000 in the shape of a car. Often, the other thing is they often come with, and 6 free pairs of application gloves. That's right. These application gloves are completely free. They'll be glad. That's what I was thinking, Ben. For your product, you're going to want to add application mitts.
Oh, I see. I
mitts
see.
Or
so I need more accessories around the hot BlackBerry scene.
Yeah. Also, there'll be a science bit, which I'm picturing for your video. Will be quite good because often there'll be molecules. The molecules.
Which a BlackBerry lends itself very nicely anyway to incorporate that
exactly.
into a molecular diagram. Mm.
Because it looks like molecules, doesn't it? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're way ahead of me here, mate. This is cooking. This is working, Ben. I'm feeling something here. I think it was the first time ever I've said something and Mike understood it.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it.
But it's no coincidence that you were brought together by BlackBerrys.
The other thing is they'll often do is it'd be like the deslimifier 7 million, and there'll be a guy pouring slime all over stuff. So you'll see, there'll be a bit in the video which is almost like a bit comedy where it's like, why is he doing that? And he's pouring slime all over his kitchen. He's pouring slime all over his bed.
Yeah.
And again, and that, yeah. But wait, it's okay because you've got the deslimifier 7 million and he brings the device out and all the slime gets sucked up and completely disappears. And it's incredible the extent to which they can, you know, de-slime or like Hoover things. It'd be like the face Hoover, the face Hoover 58 billion. And there'll be someone, they'll pour like live ants or like gravel all over someone's face and then Hoover it off. They're quite mesmerizing.
I'm thinking I'm going to sell a insulated hot BlackBerry caddy.
Mm.
So you can take them on the go, keep them hot all day.
You can drag them around with you.
Yeah.
And they come out hot.
They're kept hot all day.
The other thing is, because sometimes there'll be a moment where, remember how things used to be or something, and there'll be a picture of...
tossing a hot BlackBerry from palm to palm in a state of panic, unable to do anything else.
Screaming while his wife escorts his children out of the front door into the car and away.
And who's that in the driver's seat? It's your brother.
It's your brother.
And he fails to notice the meteorite that's hurtling towards his house just because he's so preoccupied. It's all going wrong.
In terms of that thing of like being on a health kick and heating up BlackBerries, I've totally been there because I've actually done the reverse, Ben, at a point. I got into...
What, cold pork medallions?
That's right.
Mincicles.
The exact... you know, I got into...
You've got to keep them under 4 degrees or the parasites wake up.
As long as they wake up once they're in your gut, you should be okay.
You will fully void yourself for not one, not two, but 8 hours. So, you know, what was your version?
Well, my version was I got into freezing BlackBerries or freezing berries. Or not so much freezing them as buying them frozen. So I discovered frozen berries at a point. Do you know about frozen berries?
I know what both of those words mean. Yeah, so I think I can hazard a guess.
You can put them together and improvise what that might.
I've got a mental picture. Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, I got really into frozen berries. But basically, my thing was I'm a busy guy on the go. I'm looking after my bod. Yeah. This is the new me. All I do is I pour my Special K into a bowl. I open up the freezer. I take up my very, very heavy bag of frozen berries. I sort of heave it onto the work surface and then simply start chiseling. Chisel away. No, the steak knife's not going to do it. No, you're going to need something more solid. No.
You're going to have to luz them at the corner of the table. That's not doing it either.
That's not doing it. The special chopping knife isn't doing it.
Smash them in the car door outside.
You're going to have to car door them. And so once you've chiseled off, because the other thing which happens is once the berries are frozen, what they do is they accumulate and they form one sort of shapeless mega berry.
A berry berg.
But you chisel off literally just a shape. You can't even see the distinctive features of a berry, the mini globules.
Yeah, you just have to take it on trust that they're in there somewhere.
Yeah, but it's just like a lump of matter.
Mm.
or glass, essentially. It's sort of deep, deep purple glass.
Sweet, sweet glass.
Sweet, sweet glass. Then you just put that into your you put that into your bowl. You pour the milk on. Milk's quite cold, but it's less cold than the Vreeburg. So that very, very, very slowly starts to soften it a bit around the edges. If you've ever, if you ever had to make a bolognese, and you've not given yourself enough time to defrost the mince,
pour cold milk on it.
Ben, you must have been in a situation where, you're willing that mince, that block of mince, to defrost. You're just looking at it, going, please, for the love of, come on, please. You're putting it under the warm tap.
You're panicking. It's the Christmas bolognese.
It's the Christmas bolognese. This is huge emotionally for everyone, for the whole family. The Christmas bolognese is the only thing keeping us together.
The vicar's on his way.
I think the pork medallions inside everyone's stockings thawed overnight. I think we're going to be okay when they wake up.
That's going to buy us some time.
You know when you're scraping off that softened mince off the outsides?
Yes, but there's still that hard core. There's
still that hard core.
That hasn't changed at all, yeah.
And also there's part of you in the back of your mind going, there's a very small chance this might kill everyone. No, ignore that voice. Ignore that voice. Press on with making the bolognese.
Better not to be embarrassed by a late lunch.
At least I'll die not that embarrassed. And then that final thought is always, the last chunk will defrost in the pan.
Now, you know what we've done? Mike had some bad news to give us. And then we danced around it and we talked about other things because we know it's hard sometimes to face up to the bad side of life, bad things that happen.
Yeah. Hmm. And what all we, you know, because what we've just been doing, it was so British in a way, wasn't it? All that, everything we've just said was simply a way of avoiding the emotionally difficult
truth
thing that was happening between us and Mike.
Yeah.
And how badly I relayed that news to Ben, who, Ben of all people, would be most hurt by that news, and I knew that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do know the headline of the news. Mike, you can.
Well, the news I broke to Ben was that my high end IO-10 is dead.
Oh God!
Oh, thank Christ.
Michael. It's high end dead.
It's high undead. It's been with us for a long time.
It high undied.
Why 10?
It was very nearly 14 years old. It's a decent life.
For a dog.
Yeah. It's decent life for a medium-sized dog.
So we've both had Hyundai i10s. Do you understand that by reporting the death of your Hyundai i10...
Yeah. Well, you're having to face the mortality of your own.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not just grief for yours, Mike. It's also an understanding that mine isn't going to last forever.
No, but yours is your Hyundai i10, though, is surely, I mean, in the summer of its life, if not the late spring, I mean, it's still thriving. It's not getting on in years, is it, yet?
Well, it's the same age as yours.
Is it?
Is it 14 years old?
Yeah, it's the same age as yours. We our cars, Mike, rolled off the production line at the same time.
Well, I always thought yours was a couple of years younger.
No, I mean, mine looked nicer because I used to wash it.
Ah, okay, that's it. It wasn't completely disgusting.
And I hadn't put a large dog in the back of it at any point.
Right, okay.
No, ours were both 2009 models that rolled off the production line, I think, together. I think they were twins. Sorry, I just realised that I talked about my Hyundai in the past tense then. I said it was...
Oh dear. Oh dear,
Michael! Michael!
What have I done?
What have you done?
So what happened, Mike?
Overworked. Overworked like an old nag.
Yeah.
Poorly treated, overworked, too many miles. This lovely little nip about the city car was been made to go up and down the country, hither and thither, on gigs and whatnot. And it just was just exhausted.
Cause of death?
Oh, I have a catalogue of many small and medium-sized errors and strange noises and things coming loose and things falling off and weird squeaking sensations and pedals feeling a bit odd underfoot and the sucking in of between the teeth of a man in quick fit repeatedly. Time had come.
How did he deliver the news?
He didn't really explicitly, more with...
sort of that exasperated sort of you again look, you know, when you've turned up again at QuickFit, you again, and then sort of what exactly is it you expect me to do or say, sort of all wrapped up in a single look.
So it wasn't handled gently. I think, you know, again, no. I think it should have been handled gently by him.
And maybe that's why I then didn't handle it gently with Ben. Yeah. You know, these things get passed on, don't they?
Because it should have been, you know, Mike, think of your Hyundai i10 as being asleep. And maybe this time we don't wake her up. Do you know what I mean?
That would have been nice.
Because there comes a point where there's so many things wrong with the car, isn't it? That it's like, maybe it is now time to...
It's suffering.
Yeah. And maybe you're keeping it going for you, Mike.
Which I was. I knew
more
that.
More than for her.
And maybe it's time just to not mention all the things that are wrong with it and sell it to a teenager.
There comes a time in every i10's life when it turns the final corner. You've served us well, me and my grateful wife. Think of you as a daughter.
Let's turn on the bean machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Hazel.
Hello, Hazel.
From that fine northern German town of Bremen. Is fire.
Fire.
Ooh.
Hmm.
There's two types of person in a way.
Mm-hmm. Who is on fire and one who isn't.
Exactly. And we're all somewhere on that spectrum, aren't we? We can all find ourselves. Now I was gonna say good sort of essentially arriving in a hired cottage, Airbnb, or holiday let.
Makes a beeline for the stove, the wood-burning stove.
Yeah, there's people that can and can't, or that command or don't command that area and go, oh.
Similar to those who command the barbecue space, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar to those who might offer unsolicited parking advice.
It's classic. Play the jingle.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday. I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
The provincial dad, of course, is wrestling with ancient concepts of what it is to be a dad, what it is to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those, at its most essential, is mastery of fire. Yeah.
Mm.
The husbandry of fire. Do you husband it, Mike?
Well, no, because I think as we've established, although I am, you know, very much a nailed-on provincial dad, I'm one of the weaker members of the pack, and certainly in a group of provincial dads would never be the one that was called upon to build the campfire
Yeah.
To man the barbecue, to get the wood burning stove into life. Although I'm definitely someone who has, I'm definitely one of the people on the moth end of the spectrum. I'm definitely sort of intrigued by fire. Do you know what I mean? I had the urge as a child to sort of play a bit with fire, not to commit arson.
No.
Is this going to be like you're going to confess something? Is this going true crime?
Yeah, this isn't the beginnings of me confessing that I'm actually a serial killer all along. But it's But I definitely had a bit of pyro fascination as a kid. I did. I mean, for example, one of my closest friends as a child managed to accidentally burn off his eyebrows.
Great.
Okay, that's a funny coincidence, isn't it? That a friend of Mike, who was pyro obsessed when he was a kid, happened to accidentally burn off his eyebrows. I wonder how on earth that could have happened. This is a case for detective not even being a detective, because it's so bloody obvious what happened. You burnt your mate's eyebrows off.
I might have burnt off his eyeballs as well, were it not for the fact that, thank God, he was wearing quite a decent pair of specs at the time.
So, no, what happened?
Was mucking about with those... did you do that? Mucking about with cans of Lynx? Little flamethrower things?
I'm obviously aware of it. I don't think I ever actually did it. I was too afraid that the can would somehow explode.
Well, that was the rumour that it would suck into the and you'd have a little grenade. Well,
that's the classic fear of the non-arsonist, Ben, that you were experiencing there, which apparently not something that Mike had to struggle against.
So, Mike, you took essentially a homemade flamethrower to your friend's face.
Well, not intentionally. No, we were mucking about in the bathroom of my house with this can of Lynx and we were just mucking about and jostling back and forth a bit, and it just got to the point where both of us had hands on the thing, and the flame went up, and I was arguably in more control of it than he was at that time. I certainly didn't intend the flame to go anywhere near him, but it did briefly pass over his face, and it was a case of goodbye Ollie's fringe, and certainly goodbye Ollie's eyebrows. Just dust, immediate dust.
It's quite a compelling argument for arms control, isn't it? Because in that anecdote taking place in America, that wouldn't be a can of Lynx and a match. That would be a Smith & Wesson sort of 9mm.
Exactly. It would be a 40mm anti-tank gun.
Yeah.
With two 14-year-old boys at play.
And you'd been playing around, with a gun, because you'd have heard a story, which is that if you hold a flame in front of a gun while shooting it, then the bullet sets on fire and you can fire a flaming bullet into someone.
Did you get into sort of big heap trouble for that, or was that...
Amazingly, we didn't. I think because we were quite unattended. And I think because he managed to make his way, home. I think, I don't think I ever told my parents what had happened. I mean, he certainly would have turned up back at his house with no eyebrows, And a family who probably would have cared, but it's quite a big family, a busy family. There's a lot going on, all boys.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was just absorbed into the general chaos of the day. I mean, I have to assume that his parents would have known what had happened and known where he'd been and would have... My card would have been marked.
But it's in the hubbub of a busy house with children, everyone's trying to get ready for school. It's like, Susan, have you got your lunchbox? Steve, have you seen Steve's eyebrows? Have we got Steve's? No, just get him in the car. It's too late. Doesn't matter. We'll pick him up. We'll pick him on the way back from gym tomorrow. We'll be fine. Isn't it? It's just one of those things, isn't it? Things go missing. Things, they turn up.
Also, you've got the easy excuse of saying that you've decided to become a professional swimmer and that it's going to take 0.01 off your time on the 100 metres. Yeah. Freestyle?
Marginal gains. It's all about marginal gains.
Yeah. At the under 15s level, it's all about marginal gains.
And, it's quite a sort of stretched excuse, isn't it, that in order to do that, you've had to remove your friend's eyebrows. But those are the margins, mother.
Bad business. Poorly. Very poorly treated friend. Still a friend, amazingly. He should have ditched me years ago. He's all right, though. He took a Spanish lover in Barcelona and never looked back.
Oh, wow. And do you think the lack of eyebrows helped with that? He became a sort of an interesting...
I don't know, but maybe he just knew that he just needed to get away.
Yeah.
Get away from me, and that would be a safer space and a happier space. And he was right. He's thriving.
Long, glossy eyebrows.
Lovely,
sun-kissed eyebrows now. With highlights in them, just thick, lustrous.
Yeah.
It feels like... Maybe on the 50th anniversary of it happening, so you'll be 64, you should turn up and do it again. But now it's two 64-year-old men, one of whom trying to burn off the other's eyebrows.
The trouble with that is that he's also, these days, he's much fitter than me, sinewy and physically stronger.
Because he had to become a professional swimmer to to justify your crime, to cover for his friend,
he had to become. And I think we can reveal it now. Sir Michael Phelps.
Have you given Michael Phelps a knighthood?
Well, I'm revealing that as well. It's a double reveal.
Yeah, certainly by the time I'm 64, well, certainly now, and by the time we're 64, even more so, he'll overpower me in seconds, and I'll just have to submit and allow him to just flamethrow whatever he wants off me, and that'll be fair play.
That's just reminded me of a couple of incidents of when you're, as a kid, accidentally committing quite bad physical harm to your friends. It just reminded me of a time where I was with a friend of mine who, for the purposes of the podcast, I'm going to call Bob T. Bob T? Mm-hmm. Bob.
I think there was a Bob T in a previous episode.
It was your brother last time.
Was there a Bob T in the last one?
I think it was Bob 3, actually.
Okay. That was Bob 3. So this is Bob T. So basically, I'm calling him Bob T because his name is a normal name with T on the end in real life, but not Bob.
Mr. T.
Okay. Okay. Right. We were filming a little series called The A-Team. At the time, none of us had any idea it was going to take off. We were just like, this is just another show about some guys in a van going around helping people. We had no idea.
We should make more of the fact that you were in The A-Team.
I know.
About trying to promote the podcast.
I know what you mean. It's one of those things where it's like, everyone knows about it. I don't like showing off about whatever. Yeah, for me, it's like...
You played the red stripe on the van, didn't you?
That's right, I played the red stripe on. Well, on the left side of the van. Mm. Not to the side of the van used in the credit sequence, unfortunately.
And that's made a big difference to the amount of residuals you get, hasn't it?
Huge difference to the amount of residuals I've got, because I'm always on the non-camera facing side of the van. I also didn't get any. I mean, I just had to cling on for dear life. I wasn't really.
Well, it's a different time. There's no safety checks. Exactly. You just got to dig your nails in.
Nowadays, when you're a stripe on a van, you have your own van stripe therapist who helps on the day, there has to be there to help you through it. And
not one, not two, but nine different kinds of adhesives.
Yeah, so I was basically at home playing with my friend, Bob D. I had two Playmobil Jeeps. So we were playing Playmobil. So my plan was, I'll play with this Jeep and you play with that Jeep. We'll have one Jeep each. Mm-hmm. And he said, "No, I'm going to have both of the Jeeps." So Bob T was around at our place. So Bob T's parents had put him in the care of, you know,
yeah,
my
your
family,
place, your Jeeps,
my place, my Jeeps. Mm-hmm. Now I said, "No, come on, there's two of us. Hey, well, they're my Jeeps for starters. But even if they weren't my Jeeps, I'm saying we have one Jeep each. That seems fair." And he's like, "No, I want both the Jeeps."
Very much coming across as the hero of your own story so far.
Yeah, that's about to change, though. The important thing to realise at this point is that this conversation was happening at the top of quite a steep staircase.
Oh.
Ah.
Okay. Chekhov's staircase.
I said to Bob D, okay, well, look, give me that Jeep. I didn't want both Jeeps. So give me one of those Jeeps, or I'm going to push you down the stairs.
Delivered that coldly.
It is quite. Was that quite blood chilling? That.
And also, your eyes rolled back in your head, so it was just all white. Quite weird.
Yeah. I can't control that. Also, I don't know if you've noticed while telling the story, my lips have become really, really intensely cherry red, and my face has become completely A4 paper white.
Yeah, and I've only just noticed that your left hand is made entirely of solid gold.
That's right. I've always had a solid gold hand.
Mm.
Well, certainly since this incident. So, I do tend to burnish it up, polish it a bit before telling the story. So that's why it's And you'll see the gleams coming off the gold hand will be catching in my 100% sapphire left eye. Are you noticing the way the glints catch off each other?
Yeah. It's beautiful but menacing.
And the other thing, of course, you'll have noticed is there's a blue vein the size of a really, really generous big French saucisson sec running straight down the middle of my head. Completely straight down the middle. Yeah? And it's pulsing.
Well, I didn't want to say, but yeah.
It's pulsing. So it's like a saucisson sec with sort of Kinder Eggs-shaped pulses running down it. Do you see every... Exactly every 3 seconds. Pulse. That was me. I was speeding up there. But it's, yeah.
And you're stroking with your other hand a bejeweled black tortoise.
With a forked tongue.
Alfred the Great, yes. And yes, he is wearing a World War One German helmet. That's right.
He does have poor taste, doesn't he? He can be a bit off colour, can he? Alfred the Great.
When you say wearing, do you mean on his head or do you mean his shell is?
Well, on his shell. That's why it's hard to, because it's almost exactly the same shape as his shell.
So he de-shelled himself and then got inside a sort of World War One Kaiser helmet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and can I just say, for the record, it's just because he's interested in the period historically. he does not want to restructure Europe in any significant way. Yeah. So he said, "I said, give us the truck, so I'm going to push you down the stairs. Mm-hmm. Give us the truck." He said no. He still said no. And I said, this is my last warning. I'm going to push you downstairs. Give me the truck now.
Oh, so you did give him a last warning.
He got a last warning. I think he got a last warning.
Okay.
He then said no again. And down he tumbled. Like a rag doll. Tossed hither and thither. To the left, to the right. Head into the sharp bit of a... What's it called? The sharp angle between the two bits of a stair as it goes down. Oh, I remember what it's called. It's called ow! To the left, to the right, he was tossed. His legs flailing, flailing like overcooked spaghetti. There was no hinges in him.
His child's hands desperately grasping on the two jeeps.
desperately hanging onto them. And you could hear the jeeps whack, whack, whack as he went down. He was being tossed around so much. At one point, he was being tossed back up again. He went up again a bit, down again.
Because he'd positioned a small trampette at the bottom of the flight of stairs.
I had.
For the very purpose. The point.
Yeah, yeah. And
did you then deliver the line, "Oh, I see you've met my friend. Consequences."
Yes, that's right. Consequences the snake.
Attack! Attack!
Attack! Consequences! Attack!
What sort of condition did Bobsy end up in?
Yeah, did he die straight away, or was it more of a later in hospital kind of thing?
They say he actually died on only the fourth step down. So
before he even hit the trumpet, he was attacked by the snake.
Before he even hit the trumpet. We could have pulled consequences of the snake straight off his neck. We didn't have to be so delicate with it. He was in a lot of pain. I'm not proud of this, obviously. Yeah. So those are the things that can happen when you're as a kid. Did you ever really really badly hurt a friend, Ben?
I don't think I did.
No.
I'm just racking my brains, but I think I'm not a psychopath. I think.
Maybe that's what it is, Ben. Yeah. Yeah. Have any of you been fired?
No. Let me think.
I've certainly appeared in a couple of pilots for jobs that went to series to which I was not invited back.
Oh, that's a firing.
But you don't really get...
That's a firing.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't get fired. I've never had the satisfaction of someone saying, "You're fired." It's more they just... it's very much a "don't call us, we'll call you" scenario.
But that's how it happens, isn't it?
It's done by radio silence.
Yeah. And that's almost more... It's almost more cruel for that sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't realise you've been fired until a year later when you see the series and you're... Oh.
Hang on a minute.
Whoopsie, boopsie.
They CG'd Nicole Kidman's face on top of mine. Why have they? I've lost out to Kidman again. Well, there's getting fired and there's getting let go.
No difference.
Mm-hmm. No difference.
So someone's fired you with the softly, softly approach, have they?
We agreed to a parting of paths. I worked in a TV company that made ads and stuff. Anyway, it was an accumulation of event it was an accumulation of incidents, essentially. I won't go into them all individually, but there was a shoot in a house where it was shooting a soap ad in an old, very very nice old house full of old furniture and antiques and crockery and, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And, well, I was just the runner, so I was just helping out, moving furniture and doing things. There was a, I broke every single antique plate on a wall, on one wall that was covered in antique plates. I broke all of them. Every single plate on the wall I broke.
How did you manage that?
So basically, there was this like very nice old lady who owned this fabulous, beautiful house in Notting Hill or something. It was an incredible house. They were using as a location. And they'd taken down all the plates off this wall to film something in there. I had to put the, all the plates back on the wall. So each plate was, well, for one thing I'd say, a plate belongs in a kitchen cupboard or on a dining table being used. Why are these plates attached to walls? I would say, do you know what I mean? In the first place, you're wasting a plate there. But each of these plates was mounted on the wall in a sort of little metal mechanism, which had a little L-shaped metal thing that was.
Shall I tell you the reason why?
Yeah,
because they were so valuable.
Oh yeah, far too valuable to risk eating off or to risk putting in a kitchen cupboard. These need to be in the charge of this young graduate. You know, each plate was mounted on the wall in a little L-shaped metal thing that was screwed into the wall, which had a little tiny spring in it. And what you did is you placed the plate in it, and the spring caught on the back of the plate, and it kind of sat on a very, very slight angle against the wall, and did look quite attractive, to be fair. So this wall was covered in them. So I was placing all the plates back on this little. Just careful, Henry. Breathe. In it goes. Hinge. Slip in. Spring. Mount. Test it steady, release, move on to the next plate. A good system. Lift the plate into the L, test it spring. Mm. Yeah, make sure, move on to the next one. God, this is a bit boring, isn't it? I might think about something else while doing this now. but anyway, but I basically got to the top. It was pretty much the last one. I shouldn't have started at the bottom. I thought, do it like I think they did with the pyramids. You start at the bottom, but it's not like the pyramids. You can start at the top in this situation. So the last one I put in, I placed it into the little hinge thing, placed it, let go, breathe, and I thought that was the end of the story. But that spring had other ideas, and I saw the plate. It just went and just popped out, just popped out just a centimetre, just the spring, just I think the spring had caught or something, and off it popped, and gravity did the rest. So that plate fell onto the plate underneath it, which then fell onto the two plates underneath that, because you imagine a triangular shape, so each one exponentially broke more plates. So it was like a kind of wave after wave of smash. It was smash, a smash, 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 smash is the smash. Those smashes cause three smashes each, because each called three smashes each. So smash, 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 smash. It was sort of pyramid sort of system of smashes, but getting more smashes. And that's just smash, 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 smash. And then all of them then smashed onto the a side table that was underneath these plates, which had a very old, valuable Victorian tea set on it. So they got completely smashed. Total smash fuck. Complete, 100%. You've not just broken a plate, you have smash fucked that entire wall of antiques. You've smash fucked it. And you're... Your job was to go in there, and the only thing about the job was just be really careful, obviously, and just don't break a plate, don't break a mug. It'd be terrible if you have to break a cup or a saucer. Smash fuck the whole wall. And you know what I experienced then was, because there was actually another runner in there with me who was working on the other side of the room, and was that runner then looked at me, and I swore in that runner's face. That was the worst moment of it for me. It wasn't the shards of ceramic that all over the room, and the fine dust you get from very, very exquisite china when it's smash fucked, you get some fine
particles of gold leaf in the air.
That's right, exactly, gleaming.
And all these plates had survived the sinking of the Titanic, didn't they?
That's right.
Yeah,
they survived the sinking of the Titanic. They'd been in a sort of trunk that had been present at the Battle of the Somme. They'd somehow got through that. They'd been on the first Zeppelin flight. Anyway, I just saw the look in this runner's face, looking at me with, what's the emotion? I don't know if there's a name for it, of just, I'm so glad I'm not you. It was just 100%. It was just like the eyes, everything was just saying, thank fuck, I'm not you right now. Thank God. Although the weird thing looking back is actually she'd started giving me those eyes before I broke that plate. How did that happen? Anyway, so I had to grovel to the owner of the house. I just, it was the most hideous grovel to this old lady. So that was one incident. And then a few things accumulated. There was also an incident where repeated incidents where I was discovered, because I didn't know how the world of work functioned at that point. So in the afternoons, back at the production headquarters, I would always go into a sort of room that had lots of big tapes on the wall. I think they still use them, bigger than a VHS, like giant cassette tape type things that they kept the ads on, that were stored in this room. And I'd go there and I'd sit on an office chair and sleep in the afternoons. That's what I thought. So there's that. And then the final thing was, the other thing was the last straw was the petty cash box went to wonder, and which was the other thing that I was supposed to. Well, I was when I was asleep in that room, I was looking after it. Actually, I'd say, but
like a dragon.
So I used the dragon system. I sat on top of the petty cash box and slept. But looking back, I think the real reason, one of the reasons I was fired, was that I wasn't positive enough when the owner of the production company ran their science fiction film idea past me.
It wasn't that.
No. Also, I had been fairly positive about it, to be fair. I'm not an idiot. Yeah, anyway, so we had a conversation where, without saying you're fired, it became clear that
you shouldn't return.
And I suppose when your defence is, I had no idea that, I honestly had, there's no way I could have stolen the petty cash. I was asleep.
That was your defense. Watertight alibi.
Yeah, so I was in trouble.
Now to read your emails. Thanks to everyone who sent an email to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Obviously, we have our normal email jingle that we play, but this week we're going to play a version sent in by one of you, the listeners. It's from Elizabeth in Louisiana.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's the sound of Louisiana.
Very much so. Elizabeth writes, I had coffee at 9 p.m. and it's 3 in the morning. So, of course, I ended up playing the email song to lull myself. Yours wakefully, Elizabeth in Louisiana.
Oh.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before. Hello, postman. Anything for me today? Just some old shit. When you send an email, this represents progress, like a robot chewing a horse. Give me your hoof.
Very nice.
I love that.
That was
lovely. Yeah.
You know, that felt to me like that was, I could imagine that being someone's Desert Island Discs.
Yes.
Like, imagine that coming up as a song.
Well, it reminded me of, you know, they'll occasionally like rediscover an artist from the 60s that nobody has listened to for 40 years, and then they sort of uncover some recordings. It felt like that to me.
And they've been living in obscurity somewhere.
Exactly,
case,
yes.
On the bayou.
Yeah. And then they're catapulted to fame. I feel like that's what's going to happen here with Elizabeth.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. That was magical.
I could also see that on the soundtrack of a Wes Anderson film.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice coming of age indie flick.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, more like a sort of indie road movie, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of people driving a battered old Buick.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Across Louisiana.
And they've had to do something slightly eccentric, like transport a dinosaur costume.
Yes.
For some reason.
Yeah.
To a reclusive old man.
Very heartwarming. 4 stars in The Guardian.
Easily.
Yeah.
They're not gonna risk giving that film a shitty review. Come on.
No. 89% on Rotten Tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
which is really solid for an indie film. I think I'd be like, let's go and see that. It's a Thursday. What else are we doing? Do you know what I mean? It's a Thursday.
And then you go and see it, and if everyone's honest, it's a bit long.
Just too long. And also, I know you're not supposed to, I'm taking it too literally, but literally, what was that about the dinosaur suit? Why? Was it just so they could wear it so it looked quirky in the trailer, wasn't it? That's what it was, yeah.
But a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack.
Definitely getting the CD of that.
This is from Eugenie.
Mm-hmm.
From Hobart, Tasmania.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Beans. I recently watched the 2003 Russell Crowe naval epic Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World.
Decent film.
During the viewing, it occurred to me that it was a particularly Beans-friendly movie, particularly for Mike as a provincial dad, and took note of various script moments that I felt were particularly Beansy. Imagine my surprise and smugness when I found not one, but two articles discussing the power of Master and Commander as the ultimate dad movie. Brackets. Why are so many guys obsessed with Master and Commander in GQ, and is Master and Commander the greatest dad movie ever?
Ooh.
Which means that it is perhaps the ultimate Mike movie. Anyway, some of the great and powerful lines I jotted down during the movie are as follows. Four topmen let fly.
Nice.
What's afoot with the topsail there?
Oh, yeah.
Weatherly stiff and fast.
Oh.
Run like smoke and oakum.
Oh, yeah.
And douse that gun's priming.
These are all things that can be heard from when Mike's rooting around in the garage. I can hear all those words coming through the house, and no one really understands what they're about.
Well, my children understand those instructions, of course, but no one else. But that's who it's for. Lovely. I'm gonna have to check that out. I have to admit, I never saw it.
You've never seen it? Oh, it's good.
Yeah, it's got.
I think I assumed I didn't need to. I think somehow from the poster and the trailer, I think I just assumed that I understood enough about the film that it would just be Russell Crowe shouting at some men in some fearsome weather.
Well, he's the only actor that can genuinely shout louder than real
thunder,
Napoleonic cannons, and thunder. So they're able to use real cannons, real thunder, and no recording equipment needed.
Well, he just goes straight onto the film itself.
He just goes straight onto the film.
He's the only man that can shout onto a hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, watching him downloading data at home is an extraordinary sight. booming, he can shout emails. It just booms into his computer. It's extraordinary.
My memory of it is that it's quite good. I think the storyline is that they're delivering a dinosaur costume, aren't they? Across
to a reclusive old man.
Yeah.
In the Antilles. Yeah.
It's got Paul Bettany in it, isn't it?
It has got Paul Bettany in it.
It's a bit of a bromance type thing, isn't it?
I think I could have guessed that anyway. It feels like the sort of thing where he pops up all over the place.
Who, Bettany?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic Bettany pop-up, yeah.
There was definitely a period, wasn't there? And I think that was the height of it, where Bettany was just in everything.
He was your go-to guy.
Quite an odd... It's odd that he became the go-to guy. He's a fine actor, but I don't know. What's he giving you that other actors aren't? I don't know.
Could it be as simple as just he's got like... some excellent homemade chutney he brings with him, and you can all have a bit on your sarnies at lunch. It can be that kind of thing, can't it, Mike? In the industry, it
could be that.
It could just be a human thing.
And he does, he does the biz. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't.
Oh yeah,
he shows up. He turns up. Yeah, does the biz plus chutney. It's a winning combo. It's good advice for any prospective actors out there. Get working on that Piccalilli.
Did either of you ever watch the in the 90s the TV series Sharp?
Yes. With Sean Bean.
Of course.
Yeah, because that's, I think, based on naval novels, isn't it? That'll be a naval novel sequence, I'm sure. It's quite similar.
He's army, though, isn't he? More than Navy?
He's army, yeah.
You're thinking of Hornblower.
Did you know that Paul McGann was going to play Sharp?
I didn't know that.
Did you know that, Ben?
Did you know that Tom Selleck was going to play Indiana Jones?
I didn't know that.
Which I think would have worked quite well.
Yeah.
That's so the Moustache Mafia talking there, isn't it? You always look after your own.
I've got... Well, don't get me wrong. Did love a bit of Harrison, but I think I could imagine it. He was under contract with Magnum PR at the time, couldn't wriggle out of it.
Oh. Did you know that Patricia Routledge was going to play Lara Croft?
No, but yeah, Paul McGann was going to play Sharp. And he filmed the first few scenes and he injured himself playing five-side football.
Really?
With people in the crew and had to be sent home and that was it. And Sean Bean got the role and yeah.
Whoopsie pupsie.
So actually, we could have ended up having a Paul McGann tier of the...
The Paul McGann Lounge.
The Paul McGann Lounge.
Thank you to everyone who signed up on our Patreon, patreon.com/threebeansalad. Patreon is your way of getting ad-free episodes. Also, we do a monthly bonus episode, which is normally very long. It's normally kind of a two-hour sometimes.
It's a heap of content, sure.
And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out in the Sean Bean Lounge, although this week, out of respect, it's called the Paul McGann Lounge.
It's the Paul McGann suite in the Sean Bean Lounge, yes.
Okay.
Which we opened up especially to honour this week, this very special week. Yeah.
And Mike was there last night, I guess, at the opening of the Paul McGann suite.
Which was a great honour. And we celebrated it with the...
It was the Great Monuments of the World cake sale, wasn't it?
It certainly was. Thank you. And here's my report.
The Great Monuments of the World cake sale was held at the Sean Bean Lounge last night, with all proceeds going to the Sean Bean Fund for commissioning Fleur to complete work on a special rolling pin that can flatten Trent's arm to the width of gossamer so that Sean Bean can watch. James Wedibu's version of Rio de Janeiro's Christ the Redeemer, rendered in fondant fancies, was widely held to be tasteless in every sense of the word, and he was only saved from expulsion when Ben Hart and Tonky Wonky Woo volunteered to re-sculpt it with their teeth and mouths into a Cleopatra's needle. Daniel Bazan's creme schnitter Aztec pyramids absolutely flew off the trestle table, as did Sara Sigrist's pineapple upside down Taj Mahal the right way round cake, as well as Sean Gray's pavlova of that pissing boy statue in Brussels. Barry Driscoll had lovingly reforged the 11th World Scout Jamboree Memorial Rotunda of Manila using millefeuille, but perhaps too lovingly, as he refused to sell it by the slice, much to the chagrin of G. Liz and Mark Wales, who made their dissatisfaction known by hurling MC Berlin's Rock Cake Pantheon at it, desecrating the custard shorts of a flaky pastry Boy Scout with the visage of John Coxon. Talia Panicetti attempted a repair job with a perfectly baked but superfluous nose from Johnny Anderson's Tiramisu Sphinx, but Johnny objected to this, saying he'd been saving it especially to gift to Sean Bean. This drew ire from all quarters. A sweet brown nose is still a brown nose, and the mob descended upon that coffee-flavoured delicacy, crushing it to oblivion between Kelly's Swiss Roll Itsukushima Shrine and Paul Mackley's Hanging Cheesecake of Babylon. The event could have spiralled further out of control were it not for the striking effect of Michael O'Lone bursting out of his own Bayterek of Kazakhstan-themed wedding cake as a poorly conceived sales tactic. A decent price was fetched for William Werenberg's Lardy Cake Black Stargate of Ghana, as well as for Simona Williamson's Eccles Cake East Island Moai. Nicholas Bland's attempt to celebrate New South Wales's Big Banana in Gâteau Magique drew no interest, however. Neither did Walter Holweg's highly ambitious rainbow cake tribute to that monument of Sean Bean's clandestine global power, Denver International Airport. Alex Mack and Daniel were thrilled to obtain the sweepings from under the trestle table at cut price, before licking the icing off and smushing the rest into what they claimed was a can of banane and reselling it to Jean-Paul Covin. Charlie Rapp bought the trestle table, mistaking it for a Victoria Sponge version of Rudyard Kipling's Westminster Abbey headstone, and tipped the funds raised from £6.25 to well over the £18,000 target. Thanks all.
So that's the podcast. To play us out, a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you lot. Thank you to everyone who's been sending theme tunes in. This one is from Beth from Devon and Harley, not from Devon.
Okay.
Thanks, Beth and Harley.
Dear Beans, having recently attended Mike's show in Nottingham, was it a good one?
It was I had a lovely old time.
Good.
I may be about to find out otherwise, but hopefully someone else did too.
We decided to write the Beans theme in the style of the klezmer music played before the show.
Oh, very nice.
Hopefully we've not completely missed the mark with the genre or been inadvertently offensive to the folk of Eastern Europe. Or Mike, it's short, so if you hate it, it'll be over soon. P.S. We named our weekly quiz team Two Bean Salad, and you'll be pleased to know we come last every week. Goodbye, bastards. Beth and Harley.
Thank you, Beth and Harley.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.